This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Welcome to the Dreamers Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Pardo, and today I'm interviewing Philippa Duma. I said that right?
Yeah. Yes, you did.
Who is living her dream through world exploration. Welcome to the show, Philippa.
Thank you very much, Joe. Thank you for having me on today.
Not a problem. I really appreciate you wanting to take the time to come on and tell your story of world exploration and education and just bettering yourself in a lot of different ways. So why don't we get started by giving some background about yourself?
Sure. So my name is Philippa. I am originally from the Netherlands. I have spent most of my childhood living all over the world, different places. And as I moved, I moved every 4 years, so I never really settled somewhere. And I got my bachelor's in political science and then did that for about 3 years. And then that was fun. And then fell in love with Disney like so many other people. Did the international college program with Walt Disney World twice. Moved to the United States to get a job at Disney. And all the while, the traveling and tourism just really inspired me and actually got me motivated to get a master's in hospitality and tourism management, which I completed about 3 weeks ago. At this time, I am still working, still traveling all over the place and just exploring new places and meeting new friends all over the world.
So what is it about America and I guess specifically Disney that brought you to Central Florida?
Well, you know what the amazing thing is, having lived in so many different places of the world, they all of them become a part of you on some degree, whether it's the culture, the food, the people. The United States is the only place I found so far where you can find all those different elements, either in a very small degree or in a very large degree. By going to those places, you get to re-experience that culture for just a little bit. Like, there's a fantastic Taiwanese restaurant here in Orlando where the entire menu is written in Chinese on a piece of paper, and the owner speaks probably 10 phrases of English. And while you're there for about 2 hours, you genuinely feel like you're on the other side of the world in Taiwan. And the United States is the only place I've come across where you can find all those little microcosms of culture and vibrancy that you can experience all over the world and relive for just a little bit.
Well, thank you. We definitely enjoy our cultural differences for the most part.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, it's obviously there's something very friendly about Americans that from all the places I've gone, it seems to be an acceptance for people that want to become part of the American dream, the American culture, versus a very exclusive identity feeling of, you know, well, this is for us and you can't be part of this. I always feel like people are so welcoming and appreciative. And if you tell any American, like, I love this place, this is my home now, they actually are very proud at you telling them that versus very protective of why I don't understand why you're here and this is mine. You can't share any of this with me. And that's something also that I really have come to love a lot about the United States.
So what does traveling the world mean to you?
People travel in different ways when they travel. Some people take a cruise line. Some others go with a tour group. Others go alone. For me, traveling the world is becoming a part of that culture for however long or brief you may have. So I recently got to go on a 10-day vacation to Korea, and I found pretty much a guest house where I stayed with a Korean family for the period of 10 days together with a couple of other travelers. And while I was there, I got to experience what I thought was as close to the real Korea as a tourist for 10 days is going to get. I think traveling the world, it really is about becoming a part of a culture and experiencing a culture rather than just looking at something from a distance and admiring it. And that's why I always tell people, if you are going to travel, if you are going to go see different places, really immerse yourself in that culture. If it's something that, you know, seems alien to you or might be intimidating, very often after you understand a bit more about it, you understand why that's there or why it's a part of it. Now, there's still things that freak me out, like Korea, one of the delicacies is a live octopus, and then they cut it up in pieces, and as you eat it, it sticks to your tongue because the squid tentacle stick. And now that was a little too much cultural integration even for me, but I really think it's trying to better understand how different people live, because I don't think there's one right way of doing things or habits or culture. Korea, for example, everyone gets up after 10. So whereas the stores open here at 10 or even 9 o'clock and everyone's ready to go, the streets are absolutely abandoned at 10 in the morning. You don't see a single other person till about noontime. To me, that was different. Now, does that mean that that's necessarily wrong? No, but would I ever have known that Korea gets up at noon if I hadn't gone there? No, I wouldn't have. And I think that's the beauty of traveling, finding those little things that make you understand the people around you just a little bit better.
So what would you say inspires you?
I have something called what I call the jitter. So if I don't try something new or go explore something else within a year, I get like all agitated and I just want to go try and explore something else. And that's taken me to unusual places like Taiwan and Korea, but it's also taken me back to familiar places like Portugal, where my family used to go pretty much every summer. And it's all about having the ability to step out of the life you normally lead and just try something different for a short while. And it really recharges my batteries, and I can take a lot more of the stress from work or the personal stress just by taking those moments where you step out of your normal life and really experience something different. And really, by doing something different, it really lets you live your own life even better, I think. And that's what's the beauty about trying new things, exploring places, cultures, and even enriching yourself that way.
So how did your dream of traveling around the world come about then?
Well, when I was about 7 years old, my family left the Netherlands for the first time, and we moved to Malaysia for about 3.5 years. Now, Malaysia is in southern Asia, so it's near Indonesia and south of China. And there, Malaysia is actually two parts. Part of it is a peninsula with the capital city, Kuala Lumpur, which is at this point quite industrial, on the same, you know, level as cities like Seoul in Korea. But we didn't go there. We went to the island of Malaysia called Borneo, and we lived in a very small village called Miri, where that was literally located in the jungle to such a degree that you had to fly in with an airplane. You could not drive into it. Now, going there when you're seven, first of all, when I went there, I hated it because I didn't want to leave my friends in the Netherlands. And it took me about 3 years, right before we left, to realize that growing up in a jungle, meeting different people, and then from living in Malaysia, exploring Asian countries as well, was really something that gave me a very unique perspective on life at a very, very young age. And it's little stories that most people won't believe if I tell them. Like, for example, we once had an escaped monkey in our school, and all the classrooms were locked in because nobody could go in the hallways because this escaped monkey was roaming the hallways. And we called pest control, which in Malaysia means an Aboriginal local with a blowpipe and a dart in it. So about 2 hours afterwards, because they literally have to get out of the jungle, they walk into the school, take the monkey down with a blow dart with like a frog something, poison or a paralyzer, take the monkey out and take him away, and we go back to class. Now, to do that at age seven, it really makes the rest of your life a little bit different if you're used to that at that age. So, and at that point, having stories like that, you have a need to keep getting that type of rush that this is different. I don't know how many people get to experience that, and that kind of gets you going to find new places, find new experiences, and meet new people.
So what brought your parents down to Malaysia?
So my dad actually works for Shell Oil, which is a big Dutch petroleum company. And my dad, when we were younger, his original plans were to go to the United States, but being the most popular destination, that ended up taking my family almost 15 years to accomplish. But my dad signed up for expat service, which means expatriate locationing. And Shell moves you about every 4 years to a different international location, which is why my life normally gets uprooted about every 4 years to a different destination.
Wow, I'm guessing that he must have got paid pretty well to make that decision to change, you know, change his whole family's life every 4 years.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting combination because the salary, although it increases a little, it's more of a benefits package. So once you're abroad, the company actually pays for your children's education, covers a significant amount of the housing costs. So it gives you the opportunity to really benefit from a fantastic education that you otherwise probably wouldn't have been able to afford. Like, for example, when one of the postings me and my family went to was New Orleans, which for the average American doesn't seem like a very exciting, you know, exotic location, but you can imagine a small family from the Netherlands, that's still quite an accomplishment. And Shell actually paid for me and my brother to go to private school there, and we received a fantastic high school education that probably set us up for success for the rest of our lives. Even though relocation has its, you know, costs associated with it, I will always be very thankful for the opportunity that my dad's relocation afforded me and my brother in terms of education and development.
Well, that does seem like a really good reason to put up with the hassle of moving. I don't know if I'd call it I guess it's kind of a hassle.
Oh, it definitely is. The first time you get relocated, it really uproots you. And I mean, now in hindsight, I talk as if, oh yeah, it's a totally normal thing to have monkeys in the school. But there are other, you know, issues associated with it. In Malaysia, we lived there during an outbreak of a virus that had mutated and became deadly for basically the age me and my brother were at, to the point where the school shut down due to contamination risk. We had 3 months where we lived in basically continual smog to the point where we couldn't see across the street because the smoke was that bad from forest fires. When we lived in New Orleans, we happened to live there as Katrina hit. So we got to experience a lot of not so good things about relocating, but you don't get to choose the events that happen to you. You sometimes don't even get to choose the location, but you do get to decide how you let it affect your life. And I think going into places and seeing everything as an adventure and a learning experience rather than a challenge or a test or a trial just kind of sets you up for a positive outlook in life and really makes you appreciate the experiences rather than seeing them as a continual, like, beret of conflicts and issues.
So where are your parents living now that you're not living with them, obviously?
Yeah, they're in the very, very dangerous location of Houston, Texas, where the heat and the trucks provide continual enjoyment for my family. It's definitely the probably the most normal, easygoing locations they've been to at this point in a number of years, and they're really enjoying it. So I think, especially for my parents, my dad especially has gotten to the point where he's really enjoyed living all over the world, but, you know, he wants to settle down at some point. For me, I've been in Orlando now for almost 3 years, so either I'm going to break my record and not move, or I'm uprooting myself within 2 years. But I'm hoping to at least stick it out for more than 4 years at this point, so we'll see.
So how was your traveling the world on your own received by your family?
Surprisingly, every time I decide to do these trips on my own, I've done a couple of places on my own. I've gone to Scotland, Italy, Korea, and Taiwan on my own entirely. And my family has always been very supportive. The people that are the most nervous about me doing this are people I work with or friends of mine that do not understand how I'm going on the other all the way across the world on my own. My family knows I know what I'm doing when I'm traveling abroad and doesn't feel at all nervous about it. I think when you travel alone, it really doesn't have to be any type of an issue or a threat or unsafe as long as you know what you're doing. Don't put yourself in situations you shouldn't be in. Don't take unnecessary risks. Make sure you keep, you know, important documents on you. But other than that, there really shouldn't be anything that keeps anyone traveling alone, let alone a girl or even a younger age girl traveling alone. Taiwan, I can speak basic Chinese, so that made it easier. But I spoke not a single word of Korean. And after 10 days, all I could muster was the Korean word for hello and thank you. And that was about it. And I still managed to get by just fine. So traveling alone wouldn't deter people as much as it sometimes does. And people ask me, like, why would you want to travel alone? And I always say, well, if I want to go to Korea, I shouldn't have to delay my travels or my journey or my experiences because I currently don't have anybody in my life that would want to experience that with me. if I want to go see something, I should be able to go and not let the lack of, friends or people that just don't that want to see that destination, that shouldn't deter me from going. And that's always kind of kept me exploring strange new places. For example, after my trip to South Korea, I'm actually very eager to do a tour group to North Korea to see the other side. And when I tell people that, they're like, "What? You can't do that." I'm like, "Well, actually, there are multiple travel organizations that will take you on a train ride from Beijing to Pyongyang. And again, you shouldn't be taking unnecessary risks. You can't take electronics with you. You can't obviously voice any concerns you may have about the North Korean government. But other than that, it's still an absolutely fantastic travel opportunity that has definitely been added to my bucket list. And I think it's just being prepared will be just enough for you to go on your own.
Wow. Obviously, I've seen videos from North Korea, and I guess in the cities it looks kind of normal outside, but outside of the cities it looks kind of probably third worldish.
Yeah, and the reason that really inspired me to want to go see it was on one of the days while I was in South Korea, I actually took a bus trip to the DMZ, which is the demilitarized zone, which is about a 4 kilometer buffer zone between the North and South Korea. And while we're on the bus there, we actually had a North Korean defector that we got to ask questions. And I knew, what the average person knows about the North-South Korea conflict, how it started, etc. But what I didn't really know was the conditions that the average person in North Korea lived in. And as I got to ask her a couple of questions, I was just so fascinated by a culture that has managed to keep itself so alien and separated from the rest of the world. So, for example, she was telling me she had to go through a 3-month societal reintegration program because they don't have such a thing as banking or cars, really, or the internet or electronics. And I cannot imagine what a society like that must look like. And that kind of makes me very curious to see what a society like that would look like. And that's how you keep adding countries to your list. You see something in a movie where you're like, "Well, that's Hollywood. I'm sure it's not like that." And then you type images in on Google, and then you realize, "Oh my goodness, it's actually that beautiful. I want to go see that." And I think it's always a shame when conflicts take over. Like, for example, I remember I Googled images of Damascus randomly once, and they were absolutely breathtaking. And I got so inspired that I started, reading online, trying to get some information together for a trip. And then obviously, all the conflicts that are currently happening in the Middle East happened. And it's a shame when you see images on the news or on TV of places you looked at when you were planning to travel somewhere, and they're just completely taken over by a conflict that not only, hurts the architecture, the history that's there, but also the people. And I think by having a greater respect for all those places and all those different cultures, it really makes you understand the need to end unnecessary conflicts like that. And that's also the thing I took away from the North-South Korean conflict. It felt so futile seeing that military zone. It really made me further really realize that I don't think there's a point to war. And I think it also inspires you to try to prevent conflicts like that from escalating to the point that North and South Korea are at right now. And that applies to all places around the world. And I think it just makes you really appreciate the quality of life we have over here even better.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a shame because it's the people that suffer, and not the
Exactly.
people that start the war.
Ex
Not the ones that
exactly.
actually have the problem.
Yeah, and it's even in South Korea, like you're in the military zone, and at some point, like if you can imagine, every soldier that's on the south side of that border is standing there literally with clenched fists. They're supposed to look as if they're ready to go at any second. So it's very strange to see a person standing there with their into every single muscle in their body tense. And then you say, like, "Gosh, when was the last like serious incident?" And somebody answers, "Yeah, like 20 years ago." And for some reason, that area has completely stood still in time. Nothing has happened in 20 years directly in that border. But the way the tensity of that situation, you would think something happened, last week. And I think it's just, for me, it's something that I hope doesn't stay, for example, in cultures around the world where there's a conflict, and I think it becomes important to learn when to let go and how to move on instead of lingering in something that people can't even remember really how it started and how it happened.
So what steps did you take to get started when you decided that you were going to start traveling around the world?
I was very thankful to have a family that always took the time to try to travel. If we had an opportunity, we would try to explore a new place. And my family was always very well aware of places they should take their kids, because that's the majority of the traveling occurred when I was about 8 to 11 years old, and then after that more traveling in Europe. But from 8 to 11, my family was always very aware of places kids could go and places we shouldn't. So we thought about taking a trip to northern Thailand, but at the time you had to take very intense malaria pills, which were not recommended for kids, so we opted out of that one. But growing up with a family that always, you know, wanted to see something different and explore, it really kind of sets you up for a life of exploration and travel. And I just kind of stuck with that. And when I was in college, I'm a very focused learner. So school to me is just as serious as any job would be. So all my time goes into it. And I didn't actually travel that much in the first half of my bachelor's degree. But in the second half, as I got my classes a bit more under control and my workload started to die down, I started doing a lot of extended weekend trips. So 5-day trips to major European cities. And that's when I started doing traveling on my own. And I realized you start small, you start doing something that's from Amsterdam to Scotland, which is pretty much the equivalent from like North US to about mid US. And that went fine. And then you start going a little further to Italy. And then before you know it, you're going to Taiwan and then Korea. And it kind of just grows from there. And every time you go, it just reinforces your own faith and your ability to do these types of trips. And then after a while, you just realize that there are not a lot of places that really intimidate you anymore. Now, I think there's still places, there are places I would love to go, but that I won't do on my own, just because I don't think they're safe enough to do. And like I said, you should never take unnecessary risk. But they're on my list for when I find a group of people that wants to try exploring something different. So they're not deterring me. I just have to save them for a better day. So,
how much research do you do before you decide that you're going to go somewhere?
That's actually a very good question. I am what some people call an intense planner. So I do a lot of research, mainly online, which the internet has really made traveling alone a lot easier, because you can read reviews. And I think that's the most important thing. You should always read what other people wrote. Even though, you know, some reviews might be a bit biased, the tiny little hostel in the middle of nowhere in Korea, those reviews are probably written by actual travelers. And if they say that a place is fantastic, chances are it is. So I do a lot of investigation, mainly on the place I want to stay at, because that's where you spend the majority of the time and it needs to feel safe and comfortable. But for the rest, I plan a lot. I bring lists of foods I want to try, places people recommend on the internet, maps, and I plan a lot. Like, I've had times where if I'm doing something that's a little bit out of my comfort zone, like renting a scooter in Taiwan to go through a national park, Google Street View actually helps a lot and lets me kind of orient where the rental place will be, what directions I need to be taking. And some people I'm really more on the planning side of traveling alone. A lot of people my age that travel kind of just book a flight and they'll figure it out when they get there. And that's not really my style. I find a lot more comfort in knowing what I'm going to be doing and what I can see. And I've had times where it really catches the people that I visit off guard, because they're like, how did you even know about that place? Like, only locals go there. And that's really the benefit of the internet. Websites like TripAdvisor or even people's personal blogs really let you explore that type of culture. There is a fantastic blog about an American girl that moved to Korea, and it's called Cute in Korea, where she recommends shopping places, restaurants with certain themes. And I literally printed out the maps and I went to all these hole-in-the-wall places that really only the locals know. And that, I think, really is fantastic about traveling in 2014, being able to take the learnings from an American living in Korea and use them to plan your trip all the way on the other side, really gives you an opportunity to get deeper into that culture than you would have if you, you know, booked a trip 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, no, I would totally agree, especially if you get over there and you're able to have internet service on your phone. I mean, that's that's got to be a big help too.
Exactly. And it's something like you'll be absolutely lost in the middle of a street in Taiwan. And Taiwan is fantastic, Korea as well, about providing resources for tourists. So Taiwan actually has a free city internet service. So as long as you go to a visitors bureau, they will, and show them your international password, they will give you the code to the citywide internet. And no matter where you are, unless you're in the middle of nowhere, you have free Wi-Fi with all our smartphones, etc., really give you complete access to where do I need to go, where was that one random place that I saw on a blog, and then you're really living like a local. And I think that really, really lets you experience those places even better than you would have, and places like Asia that are a little, that are quite significantly different from our own culture.
So what roadblocks have you hit along the way?
Workload, that's probably the biggest one. With Korea, I was pretty much working, I was still my master's program, working I don't know how many hours of work, and it got to a point where I'm such a planner, I didn't get time to plan, and it was down to a week, and all I had was a flight and a hotel, and that was it. And I had a moment where I panicked because I typed in Visa ATMs Korea, and I found out that the average ATM in Korea doesn't accept Visa cards, and I only have Visa cards. And I had a moment where I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get on a plane to Korea, and I'm going to get there, and I can't buy anything, and I'm going to have no money whatsoever. But again, you plan. So you find out, I got a list of ATMs that do accept Visa. I brought cash with me just in case as a backup. And then when I got there, I realized there are actually quite a few foreign ATMs. You just have to go to banks directly. They have little ATMs in the atrium, and all of them will take Visa. But that's one of the roadblocks, where not having enough time to plan. And sometimes there are things, cultural differences, that can be a lot to take in at first. I remember the first time I went to Taiwan, the food is very different. And it's fantastic. And I love it now. I miss Taiwanese food a lot. But the first time I went there, it was a lot to completely change your diet to rice-based and soy-based. And I wasn't a big fan of soy at the time. And it got to a point where at some point I was just begging to find a McDonald's somewhere, because I felt like I was starving while I was there. And by, you know, every time you go back, you want to try something a little different. But I'll be honest, like the first time you go to somewhere completely different, it's a big culture shock. And to pretend like you're not going to have that, either then you're not experiencing the real culture, or you're kind of not being honest with yourself. And I think it's, the more you travel, the less you get that shock. But there's still times when, you know, you're in the middle of nowhere in Korea, and you're like, I have no clue what any of these signs say. And oh my God, like, where am I going? But then people are always nice. And I really am always shocked by the friendliness of people around the world. There's something innate about humans that I think gives people a type of compassion and a pride in their own country and their willingness to share their culture with others. And even in Taiwan, when I speak Chinese, there are people that are genuinely shocked, because obviously not a lot of foreigners can speak Chinese. And then when they ask you, you know, why do you speak Chinese? And you tell them, because I love your culture and I think it's beautiful. You can genuinely see the pride in their eyes. And then really doors open. I've stayed at people's homes. I've had people take me on tours. I've had almost pretty much complete strangers on the street say, do you want me to give you a tour of this? I love this place. Let me tell you what, you know, all the little things here. And then, you know, I tell that to other people that travel that you meet along the way. And they're like, how did that happen? And you just say, well, because I expressed an interest. And I think people are always willing to share what they're passionate about. And that's pretty much what people are doing on your show as well. They're sharing what they're passionate about and what inspires them. And I think by finding people around the world and getting them to share what they love, that's how you really enrich not only their lives by giving, you know, a meaning to what they're doing, but also enriching yours a little for having gotten to share that experience with them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think people mostly want to just be helpful and friendly, and especially if they see that you have an interest in what they are about or their culture or something that they're interested in. And this show is definitely for that, to give people an opportunity to look in at different ways of living and different ways of life from around the world.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I always tell people. When you get to travel, it's about the people you meet along the way. And it's not just the people from the culture there. Like on when I was in Taiwan, I actually met friends while I was staying in a hostel somewhere that I added on Facebook. I still follow their trips as they're going across the world. They follow mine. And at some point, we actually met up somewhere else halfway across the world. And I think I really recommend to people as they travel, even if it's traveling to another part in the United States, experience the people that are there and become to have those conversations. And I think that's the beauty of when you travel alone, because there's no one that you're talking with. You're open to talk with others. And I think that's really what's something very unique about solo traveling that's unappreciated and people really need to try to experience on their own. And the first time I traveled on my own, somebody told me that all the experiences you have will be twice as intense, because for the number of people traveling you, that experience seems to, the effect like gets divided by that number of people because you're sharing it together. And if you do things alone, you get the complete intense reaction. You know, the moment you walk into a 15-year-old temple as monks are chanting, that's your experience. That's completely you. And that's all for you to enjoy. And I think I really recommend that anybody that wants to try traveling or has traveled a lot but hasn't traveled alone really needs to give it a try and try something a little bit more comfortable that you're, you know, you've done in the past or something you're familiar with, and see the difference, because it really, it lets you meet people along the way and you get friendships that you never thought you would have and experience things you never, you know, dreamed you would when you planned a trip.
So could you share a favorite memory?
Gosh, there's so, for example, I know I'm talking a lot about Korea and that's just because it happened recently, but I stayed in a guest house and there was a young girl named Shin Young that helped clean our rooms every day. And we started talking and it was her, she was learning English. Obviously, I spoke no Korean. And it's funny how we started talking about life. And she told me why she had gotten a job in the hostel. And it was all about meeting new people. And she wanted to meet foreigners as they're traveling through Korea, practice her English, get a worldly view without having to leave necessarily. And as we talked, at some point she brings in this game called Gonggik, which is what every Korean child plays. And you basically throw little like stones on the ground and throw them up in the air as you catch them. It's a little complicated to explain, but we played that with her. And at some point towards the end of my trip, she says, "This one's for you. You get to take it back home with you. And then you get to teach people how to play Gonggik in the US. And the gesture of that moved me so much because it really felt like she had shared something with her culture and was encouraging me to take that back and share it with others. And I think that's what traveling does. You share your stories with other people and their lives become a little bit more special and excited through those stories. And, you know, and then they want get inspired to go do something. And I think that's all about, that's what traveling and exploration and trying new things is all about. It's all about enriching the lives not only of yourself but of the people around you as well.
So is there any parts of your dream that haven't worked out yet?
Obviously there's still destinations I want to go that I haven't had a chance, and sometimes, you know, I personally I wish I could go on a vacation every other month, and that's not realistic with work. But I think it's, and like I said earlier, you know, you can see the challenges in life as roadblocks. But Randy Pausch, I don't know if you've heard of him, he did the last lecture, he had this fantastic quote where he said the hurdles in life aren't walls to keep you out, they're walls to keep the other people that aren't as passionate and serious as you out, and as you keep them out. And all you do is you jump over that wall and you just keep going. And I think that's for any of the roadblocks I've experienced, I just see them as something that I'll get over. It might take me a little bit to climb that wall, but it's nothing that would ever keep me from going, you know, where I want to go and experiencing what I want to see.
And with that said, what do your dreams for the future look like?
Well, kind of like I hinted at, North Korea is definitely on my list. I have a friend that I met while working at Disney who lives in northern Thailand, who's promised to take me to go see elephants on her scooter. So that's definitely up there too. And just, you know, I'm always adding new places to the list of things I want to see. And sometimes an opportunity to explore something new comes up that I hadn't planned. So I'm never definite and finite in my list. It's quite flexible, but I have enough places I want to go that will keep me busy for a lifetime.
So is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
I guess the thing that I would like people to take away with is that traveling really is a way to enrich not only your day and enjoyment, but your culture and your appreciation and whatever constraints you may have, whether it's time or money. one trip of a lifetime can already redefine how you view the world. And if that means that you take that one trip, let that be the thing that opens up your eyes and be open for it. Plan something that goes outside of your comfort zone because you'll realize after the fact that you're a different person for it, and there's no such substitute for that. So really, I encourage people to do that one trip.
Well, I think that's great advice. Yeah, I mean, any trip can, or really any experience can change your whole outlook on life and everything.
Exactly, and I think it's being open to receive it. If you're not willing to let the experience change you and affect you, it's going to go past you and you're not going to realize the opportunity or the impact it would have had. And that's the same thing for everything in life. Let it really redefine you and be open for that experience, and you'll realize that you'll grow stronger and better as a person. And it will, even if it seems hard at the time, you'll look back in 5 years and you'll realize that that one moment redefined where you were going and has made you stronger, greater, and better. So.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, Philip. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for having me. And I hope everyone enjoyed listening to all my random stories from Korea, Malaysia, Taiwan, etc.
Yeah, I hope it inspires some people to take a trip of their own, whether it's to there or really anywhere.
Exactly. And you're always welcome to visit Walt Disney World, the fantastic experience just south in Orlando as well.
Well, I would love to have you on again in 6 months to a year, and we can talk more about where you've been since then.
Yeah, that'll be fantastic. I don't have anything planned for a little bit, but I'm sure something will pop up pretty soon, and I'd love to share that with everyone else on the show as well.
Great. All right. Well, thank you very much again.
Thank you, Joe, and have a great day.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/dreamerspodcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.